Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler, and you can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Wednesday, May 21st. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league. We're lucky that we have just one IL placement, but it's outfielder Dylan Cruz, who was placed on the 10-day IL with an oblique strain. The severity of that strain is unknown, but oblique strains are usually something that keep players out for a few weeks. Ian Happ sort of tested that notion by returning in just 7 days yesterday, but I'd expect Cruz to be out for at least a couple weeks. Very unfortunate. In a corresponding move, though, top prospect Robert Hassel III was promoted from the minors. He played center field in his debut, with Jacob Young dealing with a minor injury, but I'd expect Hassel to take over for Cruz in right field moving forward. And yesterday, I was a little bit confused about why Hassel was getting the promotion, but with Cruz going on the IL, it makes sense. They're going to need some help in the outfield. Before, Hassel had no path to playing time, so I had no clue why they'd be calling him up. This makes a lot more sense. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Mike Burrows is expected to be recalled from the minors to start today versus the Brewers. This is the Pirates' number 15 prospect. It won't be his MLB debut, but it will be his first career start. Burrows, a 25-year-old lefty at AAA, pitched to a 2.51 ERA with a 1.05 whip and a 31.5% strikeout rate in 8 appearances, which included 7 starts. So there's a possibility he parlays that success in AAA to the majors. Next, we have starting pitcher Chase Petty, who was unable to parlay his AAA success to the majors as he was optioned to the minors as he really struggled in his first taste of the majors. Petty, in his first 2 career starts, recorded, you're not going to believe this, I couldn't, that's why I paused, a 21.94 ERA and a 3.94 whip. Wow, not great. His stuff looked electric, though, and Petty will be back at some point. It looks like the Reds are going to deploy a 4-man rotation because they have 2 days off over the next week, so we are likely to not see a corresponding move in the rotation to replace Petty. In terms of news, starting pitcher Justin Verlander is expected to be placed on the 15-day IL with pec soreness. I'd expect one of Jordan Hicks or Kyle Harrison to shift from the bullpen to the rotation to replace Verlander, but they've got plenty of young starters in the minor leagues as well. That's the Giants and Verlander heading to the IL today. Next, we have starting pitcher George Kirby, who is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL to make his season debut today in Houston. Kirby has been out all year with shoulder inflammation, and I'd be activating him everywhere, and he's a must roster in every league, one of the top pitchers in baseball. And speaking of, starting pitcher Jared Jones is expected to undergo season-ending elbow surgery. Super unfortunate. You can drop him now. I've been holding him in plenty leagues, hoping for a midseason return from the electric right-hander, but Jared Jones set to undergo season-ending elbow surgery. We won't see him until next year. I'd expect it to be sometime in the middle of that season as well. So very unfortunate there for the Pirates, but luckily they've got plenty of pitching talent with Paul Skenes and now Mike Burrows coming to help. Now we can take a look at some of the notable performances from Wednesday, a day in which we had 15 games on the slate. Don't let that fool you. One of them was a resumed game, the Guardians and the Twins, and another one was postponed as the Braves and the Nationals will make up that game, I'm pretty sure, in September. Now we'll look at our hitters, leading off with outfielder Nathan Lukes, who helped the Blue Jays to a win versus the Padres, going 3-for-4 with a pair of runs, a home run, and a pair of RBIs. He's up to 4 homers on the year now, and this one traveled 373 feet at 103 miles per hour. And Lukes is getting an extended shot for the first time in his career at 30 years old. He's on the strong side of a left field platoon, but he's batting at the bottom of the order. So far, he's displayed incredible plate discipline, which is carried over from what he's done in the minor leagues and what he did in his brief stint in the majors last year, that I think was around 22 games. He's around 32 games so far this year, but the plate discipline has been on fleek, do people Do people still say that anymore? Wow, that was a callback. He's got 11 walks to 13 strikeouts on the year. That's Nathan Lukes. And his contact skills have been incredible. 93% zone contact rate suggests Lukes is above average at making contact, but he's been pretty unlucky in the BABIP department, and StatCast suggests that rather than batting 266, Luke should be batting closer to 290. He's got decent but not exceptional power, so he probably is somebody who maxes out at 15, which I think makes Nathan Lukes a decent option in deep leagues with five outfielders. Now we'll take a look at first baseman Nick Kurtz, who did all he could, but the A's lost to the Angels. He went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, a pair of home runs, and 3 runs batted in. He's up to 4 homers now. The first one traveled 435 feet at 107 miles per hour, and the second one went 430 feet at 105 miles per hour. Kurtz got off to a slow start, but has now homered 3 times in the past 2 days. And Kurtz has struggled immensely with strikeouts this year, entering Wednesday with a 35% strikeout rate. And honestly, there's a lot more swing and miss in his game than I thought. He didn't strike out a lot in the minors, and so I expected him to come up and really just hit the ground running. But outside of this recent outburst, it's been really tough sledding for Nick Kurtz. 698 OPS on the season, but this outburst is somewhat promising and hopefully is suggestive of a tangible change in Kurtz's approach. But for me, those strikeouts are too much to stomach. And if he doesn't start cutting back on them soon, I'm probably cutting bait everywhere. Next, we have outfielder Leody Taveras, who helped the Mariners to win on the south side of Chicago, going 2-for-4 with 2 runs, a home run, 2 RBIs, and a steal to complete the combo meal. He's up to 2 homers and 8 steals on the season now. His homer traveled 391 feet at 103 miles per hour. And after a breakout 2023, Taveras took a step back last year and struggled to begin this year, leading to an early season trade from the Rangers to the Mariners, where he struggled even more. Entering Wednesday, Taveras was batting just 150 with a 39% strikeout rate since landing in Seattle. But he showed he's still capable of tapping into his power speed potential every once in a while with the combo meal yesterday. The Mariners are giving Taveras an everyday shot in right field, and I wonder how long that lasts with how he's performing. The former top prospect is still just 26 and is proven capable of fantasy relevancy and elite defense in the past. So I think I'm just going to sit back and wait and see if this outing was the start of something new, or if ultimately the strikeouts are too much for Taveras to overcome. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Wednesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Ryan Yarbrough, who usually has an opener, as he helped the Yankees to win versus the Rangers, tossing 5 innings, allowing 3 hits and 1 run, while walking nobody and striking out 8. He induced 14 whiffs with 43% CSW across 81 pitches, and that 43% CSW led baseball to earn Yarbrough the King Cole on Wednesday. The 8 strikeouts are also his most strikeouts in a game since July 2022, and Yarbrough's currently sporting the highest strikeout rate of his career at 23%. Yarbrough faced a righty heavy lineup on Wednesday against the Rangers, filling up the zone with 83 mile per hour cutters for 10 called strikes and 50% CSW, and tunneling his sinker off of them as they nailed the outside edge for 47% CSW. Yarbrough then kept his changeups below the zone for 6 whiffs and 42% CSW, and even incorporated sweepers for 40% CSW as well. Huge day for Yarbrough. That sweeper actually is a new pitch for him this year, replacing his curveball of old, and it actually gives him a legit offering for whiffs against lefties, sort of supporting that higher strikeout rate and the career high strikeout rate that we've seen from Yarbrough on the season. And I don't think this version of Yarbrough is that much different from the old version, but with the great win chance pitching for the Yankees and this new strikeout ceiling that he's displayed, I think we can start trusting Yarbrough more as a streamer, like his next outing in LA against the Angels. Next, we have Gavin Williams, who helped the Guardians to win in Minnesota, tossing six innings, allowing two hits and one earned run. While walking two and striking out six, he induced 13 whiffs with 30% CSW across 98 pitches. And he finally did it. The man threw 22 cutters as his second most used offering. And while they weren't overly impressive at just 59% strikes and 18% CSW, it really doesn't matter because it worked. And they set up Williams' fastball for a huge day at 54% usage. The heater induced 10 whiffs and 36% CSW, while his sweeper joined the party as a strike offering and induced a trio of whiffs along the way. His curve took a back seat for the day, and it's a little bit worrying to see Williams down a tick and a half on his heater, but that cutter usage has got me in the clouds. I think I can ignore it for now. It's what we've been asking for all year. That cutter is a pitch that will help him earn strikes, keeping Williams in at bats and helping him when one of his other offerings is unable to show up on a day or isn't able to earn strikes. Unfortunately, we're probably not going to want to test Williams out against the Dodgers next. I think a smart fantasy manager would bench him there and hope to see that cutter show up again. I, for one, am sometimes not a smart fantasy manager and will probably start him anyway. Lastly, we've got Kevin Gausman, who helped the Blue Jays to win versus the Padres, tossing seven shutout innings, allowing just three hits. He walked nobody while striking out nine, inducing 19 whiffs with 34% CSW across 92 pitches. I'm sure everyone's asking the question that I am, is Gausman back? Well, he went almost exclusively splitter fastball in this one. I think he threw just two sliders. Both pitches were electric, though, as the splitter induced a whopping 13 whiffs as it lived below the zone, while his heater induced six more whiffs as he kept it arm side to lefties and either went upstairs or downstairs to tunnel with the splitter against righties. Few pitchers can survive as a two-pitch pitcher, especially when one of those is a splitter, and that inherent inconsistency makes Gausman a textbook cherry bomb, and we got a taste of the sweet cherry flavor on Wednesday, but on any given night, Gausman could explode. He gets the Rangers in Texas next, and you might as well flip the coin on that one after the success he found on Wednesday. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Wednesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Dennis Santana recorded his fifth save with a perfect ninth. Don't worry, I'm still in Don Kelly's ear. David Bednar had pitched on back-to-back days. I predicted this. Go back and listen to yesterday's podcast. Next, we've got Tanner Scott, who recorded his 10th save with the perfect ninth. Pretty impressive that he's already up to double digits with the way that the Dodgers have used their relievers in the years past. I wouldn't have expected Scott to get to double digits this fast, but there we go. He's on pace for more than 30 saves. Next, we've got Daniel Palencia, who recorded his first save of the season with a perfect ninth. I said a couple days ago that Palencia is my favorite to take over for the ninth inning for the Cubs with Porter Hodge on the IL and Ryan Pressly on timeout. And here we go. Some confirmation there. I think I'd be picking up Palencia in a lot of leagues if you're desperate for saves until Porter Hodge returns. And lastly, Andrés Muñoz recorded his MLB-leading 16th save with a scoreless ninth. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Edwin Diaz pitched a hitless ninth up by four after the Mets put up an insurance run in the top half. Luke Weaver pitched a perfect ninth in a tie game before Jason Dominguez walked it off in the ninth inning, handing Luke Jackson his fourth loss and second blown save. It's been a rough season from Jackson. I'd be really surprised if he is the next Rangers pitcher to get a save. Pete Fairbanks pitched a scoreless ninth up by four. The Rays put up three insurance runs in the ninth, so that explains that one. Yoan Duran pitched in that resume game. The Twins tried to push Joe Ryan to finish off the final few innings of that game. And then Yoan Duran was called upon when Ryan got into trouble in the ninth, but he allowed three runs to score, blowing his first save before closing out the inning. And then the Twins walked it off in the bottom half to net Duran his second win of the season. Trevor Megill pitched the 10th and allowed the zombie runner to score, and the Brewers would go on to lose that one in 11. Felix Bautista pitched the 9th in that one and allowed a run to blow his first save. And lastly, Emmanuel Clase pitched a scoreless 9th with a 4-run lead because the Guardians put up two insurance runs in the top half. But if you'd like more information on relievers, check out Rick Graham's weekly articles and tune in live to the In the Pen podcast tomorrow night. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now I look forward to Thursday, May 22nd, a day in which we'll have just 9 games on the slate. My matchup of the day is Chris Sale versus Mackenzie Gore. 2 southpaws with the ability to rack up a boatload of strikeouts. It should be a blast to watch. In terms of probable starters, we've got 5 guys in the auto starts tier, including both Sale and Gore. We've also got Carlos Rodon versus the Rangers, Jack Flaherty versus the Guardians, and Nathan Eovaldi in New York against the Yankees. Our probably starts tier has 3 guys, and that's what we'll find. Lucas Giolito versus the Orioles, our streamer of the day. I am going with this one as well. I'm backing up Nick on this one. I've been rostering Giolito in my home league. It's been back and forth, snip snap with Giolito, blow-ups or impressive performances. I think I'm going to take the chance. The Orioles lineup has not been scary this year. That team is not good so far early in 2025, and Giolito is somebody who relies heavily on a changeup, and we've seen the Orioles load their lineup with lefties against right-handed starters, and I think Giolito should be able to survive there. I'd also keep an eye out for Lance McCullers Jr. He is taking on the Mariners in Houston. This one is in the do not start tier, so really only do this one if you're desperate. I only chose him because I feel like he's got a high ceiling if everything goes right. In terms of hitter suggestions, I'd look at Brewers and Pirates hitters in PNC Park. We don't know who the Brewers pitcher is going to be, so that's already a plus for Pirates hitters, and the Pirates will send out Mike Burrows in his first career start, and I think the Brewers should be able to take advantage of that one. I'd also look at Phillies and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. Pretty self-explanatory. We'll see Ranger Suarez take on Herman Marquez in that one. And lastly, I'd look at Braves hitters versus Trevor Williams. I said this yesterday, but that game got rained out, so I'll be targeting Braves hitters again against Trevor Williams and his 5.91 ERA. And I will close things out with our relievers to watch. Felix Bautista has pitched on back-to-back days, so I'd expect Yennier Cano to get a save opportunity on Thursday. Luke Weaver has pitched on back-to-back days, so Devin Williams should be the Yankees closer on Thursday. And lastly, Trevor McGill has pitched in 3 of the past 4 days, so maybe Abner Uribe gets a save op for the Brewers on Thursday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. Tune in live on YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. Trevor Huth will be with you tomorrow and throughout the weekend. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.